I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on KVSH 101.9, Voice of Vashon. This is a travel show. I like to have friends on and talk about different places around the world. And today I have my friend Steve Howell, who is originally from Zambia. Steve, you are going to talk to us about Africa in general. You spent a lot of time there. You grew up there. How long were you there? Were you there your whole life and then you came to the United States?
Yeah, basically in Zambia up until about 15 or so, and then I went on to South Africa for high school and then came to the States for university.
So you have an interesting story about Zambia and that you actually grew up within a tribe, correct?
Yeah.
Can you walk me through that?
Yeah, definitely. So my grandparents on my mother's side went out as missionaries. It was 1923.
Where were they from?
From the States, from New York.
Okay.
Upstate New York. And so they went up, landed in Cape Town by ship, and then made their way up through land all the way up. Took months, essentially, get all the way into the interland within Zambia. They had to pull up the Zambezi River. There's no roads.
Wow.
If I remember, I think that took 2 months to actually get up from once they got to the Zambezi. And
you said this is 1923.
Yeah,
so imagine how difficult that would be.
Extremely difficult. Extremely difficult, you know, absolutely wild.
What kind of missionaries were they?
They were Protestant missionaries,
mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, yeah.
The kind that everybody's going to hell kind of thing.
Well, aren't we anyway? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
There you go. Exactly.
So go ahead. So they then went up the Zambian River.
Yeah, they basically stopped right at the border, what is now Angola. And that's where they set up the mission station. It's basically nothing. And so the tribe that they started with was the Luvali tribe.
What is it called?
Luvali.
That's a pretty name.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting. There are a lot of tribes in Africa, in Zambia, about 67 official tribes, but that was one. So my mom was born there. She was the very first, she and her twin were the very first white babies born.
This tribe?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a whole different world, because some of the Africans weren't sure that they were even human until my mom and her twin sister were born. They're, well, maybe they must be human. They'd never seen white people. Even,
yeah, sure.
Even as I grew up, a lot of people would come running up to me and then
they wouldn't have known television.
Never
they wouldn't
seen
have
a
known.
White person before. So I grew up basically one of very few white people in an African tribe. My very first.
What a fascinating story.
My very first word as a baby myself was a Luvali word. It was a tribal word, and it wasn't mom or dad. It was spider, just tutu in
tutu.
Luvali.
Yeah, I like that. Tutu. Tutu. I'm gonna bring that into my own world now. So your mom, did she then also become a missionary?
She did, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. She obviously stayed, and then you were born within this tribe.
Yeah,
and you're. Mom's twin, did she stay as well or did she come back to the States?
She stayed for many, many years and eventually went back to the States. Yeah.
So what was schooling like? Was there schooling?
There was schooling. So we went to a boarding school, also way out in the middle of the bush. So where we were.
But not within the tribe's children?
Not within that tribe, no. It was 200 miles away, which took 2 days to get there by bush roads.
Mm-hmm.
It was also extremely remote. We were. Normal mission station was 500 miles from the nearest town. So once a year we go to town to get supplies.
Once a year.
Once a year. And then bring it back and then, you know, live off the land and whatever else. So, I mean, we had leopards on the roof, hyenas right outside the door. I grew up petrified, honestly, petrified of everything. Just because everything, almost everything could kill and eat you. So,
right.
And as a kid, you're absolutely a target, and you know it. I know you're you hear every story ever of any death, really, and I'm whatever.
So what was your dwelling like your house?
So the house, it had basically
what year was it?
That I was born? Or that
what's the time frame like?
So for me, that would have been 1965.
Okay.
Yeah.
Until 1980, until you then went away for...
Yeah, well, then I went to, Zambia. So Zambia until I went to high school in South Africa. And that was the introduction for me to a big city.
Amazing culture shock that must have been. But let's go back, because I want to hear about this dwelling. I want to know more about
this. Yeah, so basically, grass roof for sure. And then just concrete mixed with mud walls, basically. So for the bush, fantastic. For most people coming to foreigners that would come, non-Zambians, they would arrive and I'd laugh at them because they'd be petrified. They're looking around and they could see massive spiders on the walls, which were normal.
Tutu.
Yeah, exactly. There's the spiders we call flatties they were really quite big, but they were very flat, hence the name. And we loved them because they would sit on a wall and they'd run out and get mosquitoes. They just fly really fast just incredible.
Yeah.
So we never touched them. But, you know, the other spiders, baboon spiders and everything else.
You'd kill them.
We did. And now I have shame for that.
We
had a lot of, during the rainy season, there'd be every single day we'd see some kind of poisonous snake. Typically mambas, spitting cobras, occasionally bloom slungs. They're highly venomous, all of those.
I'm just trying to grasp all this. What a far out way to grow up. I mean, it's truly, truly amazing.
Different. There's a National Geographic article on the area I grew up on, actually. Some of the same pictures, some of the same area, same canoes.
And were you accepted by the children then, if you all sort of grew up together?
The African children, absolutely. Yeah, they're wonderful, warm, wonderful people. Especially Zambians are known to be just rich. I mean, just rich in character, loving, peaceful people. And I notice that as I go to different African countries. I love Africa, but there's a difference within Zambia compared to some
places.
Well,
it's such a huge continent.
Oh, it's a massive continent.
Yeah. I mean, look at our own Alabama versus Washington.
Yeah. And different for sure.
Very different.
Yeah.
What was the landscape like? I mean, was it hilly, flatland?
So savanna, what they would describe as savanna, so a little bit of grass and a little bit some trees, not very high trees, you know, like acacia-type trees. Not jungly, although some areas, even where I went to boarding school, is a little bit more jungly, where there's be vines and more thick forest. But most typically savanna, a little bit of rolling hills, not very big. But
wow, that sounds amazing.
Different.
And so would a lot of other missionaries come through your pathway? How did you have contact with the outside world?
The contact was usually through CB radio. So they would basically contact each other twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening, and just get on the radio and any issues, talk about it, whatever it was.
And were there a lot of other missionaries within the area?
Spread all throughout, yeah.
Yeah. Mostly in Zambia.
Zambia. There are other countries right around there too, where there are missionaries in Angola, we're right next to Angola and
specific
Zaire.
From the ones that your family was. What was the religion?
It was evangelical. They call themselves Plymouth Brethren.
Oh.
Plymouth Brethren is it's very unique, almost cult like.
And that's out of New York?
No, they originally started back in England, but when they established America, they started in Plymouth Rock and wherever that is in the States.
Massachusetts.
Yeah. I think that's where they became famous, but what's unusual about them, so they have the same similar kind of beliefs to what Baptists might believe, except they have no pastors. So there's no center anything. It's all decentralized. So every single church, they call a chapel, every single chapel is kind of self-organized with elders, and it's just led by men officially.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the Mormon community like that, led by the elders?
But they absolutely have people that dictate their belief systems,
yeah,
and then
sure,
they broadcast
do.
That, around the world, and it's So they're much more aligned, essentially. The Plymouth Brethren tend to be quite homogenous because they share preachers all the time. So all men are expected to grow up and learn how to share and talk and speak. And then the better speakers usually go from one, go to another chapel, and that's their way of essentially intermixing.
Women? What are expected of women?
Women are expected to, talk and share with other women, but they're not allowed to lead the church.
They're not allowed to lead.
They're not allowed to lead, right?
Lead
they can
or
lead
leave.
Other women, but not men.
Yeah, sure.
I can
imagine.
Exactly.
So, is this still a big religion today?
No. I mean, it's not that big at all. It's very kind of reclusive.
Were you yourself ever like a missionary for it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for many, many years. And it wasn't until my 30s I kind of started to think differently. And I pretty much am known as worse than Satan and worse than the Antichrist at this point.
Aww.
Just because I can't believe it. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense. And
that must have been very difficult for you to leave.
Extremely
something
difficult.
Something so inherently ingrained in you.
Absolutely. I mean, I used to smuggle Bibles. I believe so strongly. And I would be killed. I'd be executed if I was caught. So I had that kind of belief system. So for me to leave, I knew it. I was leaving possibly the entire friendship world that I knew, that side as well,
right.
Might even lose my family. And that's the cost. And I knew
that's
it.
That's a very huge cost.
And I can't do this. For me, it didn't seem like truth at all. It seemed the opposite. And
right. It
was a huge struggle. And of course, you know, I saw their terror. I saw my family's terror in particular.
Of you waking up to something
else. Yeah. And I had deep compassion. I had and all sorts of stuff from church people that would, whatever, all sorts of things were said to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I saw was their fear, because if I rejected that belief system, and I grew up as a missionary kid, multi-generational actually, and then led trips and everything, and I used to do door-to-door Billy Graham, all this stuff, and if I rejected it, that's a very scary thought, because I had a much better, much stronger belief system than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And most people have barely anything. They just get more and more money, bigger cars, bigger houses, and that's their belief system. They go to church. They're not willing to die at all for their faith, right? Even though they think the whole world is going to hell, they're not willing to do anything about it. I was. So if I rejected it, it's a scary thought. And it was scary for me too, because I didn't believe in anything else. It's like,
Well, it's all that you knew. I mean, you grew up in a
right.
very
I just knew I couldn't
small
believe
village.
That anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know
tough.
That about you. Yeah. How many, like in the village, what was the name of the village that you grew up in?
Chavuma.
Chavuma?
Mm-hmm.
How many people are there?
Oh. It's easy to answer the question, how many people in the tribe?
Which yeah,
tribe
right.
is spread over maybe 200, 200 to 400. I guess it's way more than 400 square miles. Considering more than that, that's about 50,000 people spread over a massive area.
Okay.
So just villages tend to be maybe everything from 3 up to perhaps 10 huts. So.
Got it.
Yeah. Maybe 15, but.
Well, I want to hear more about the Zambian people. Will you share some music with us?
Yes, absolutely. Well, a very famous song that came into existence right at independence, song called Tiendi Pamodzi, and I think we're going to play that here in a moment. And that's a song we heard many times growing up, and we'd all sing it together. It was a song in a language called Nyanja. Nyanja is one of the seven main languages in Zambia, and this is it here, coming here. So it's let's all come together as one with one heart,
okay.
is what it means. And
I
this
look
is
forward to it.
Kaunda, the very first president, is an amazing man who... unlike so many other African countries, there's Zambia, the transition from colonial rule, there was very peaceful. And they managed to maintain peace. Most other countries around, with the exception
of
Botswana and Namibia and Malawi, everything else had some kind of wars. And as you know today, Congo, which used to be Zaire, it's horrific. Angola still got issues. All these other countries. But Kaunda, for who he was...
Let it peacefully.
Yeah.
Good. That's a beautiful song. What's the name of it again?
Tiyindi Pamodzi.
So do you still speak the language?
I barely speak any Luvali. When I go back, I pick it up. But I barely remember any of it. Ugh, I'm switching my accent.
Well, I can imagine it'd be hard to kind of figure out what your accent actually is.
Yeah, when I first came to America, I was extremely shy. And so I came here for university and I didn't like to talk to people. I didn't even know American culture and very intimidated. And as soon as I spoke, somebody said, "Oh, where are you from?" And I hated that. So I worked for about 2 years. I worked very, very hard on getting an American accent. And I have an unusual accent. I have very few white people. I'm white in the bush. In Zambia, have this accent. They might have a slightly different one. But I grew up around basically only black people. So my accent is more very typical of a black man in Africa, at least in Zambia.
Yeah.
It's not what most people have. This is, as soon as I go back to Africa, this is exactly how I speak, like this one right now.
And you actually did just come back from Africa.
I did. I was there for, 2 months?
Yeah. Mm. Tell us more stories about growing up in Zambia.
Yeah, so something interesting in my two things with, so my mother, her first, the second born actually, second born twin. So when she was born, they weren't expecting twins. And the African helpers, basically nobody was expecting this second baby. They picked her up and there's this look and then they just walked away. And what they did is they walked away with my mom as a tiny little baby and they took her off into the bush.
What were they going to do with her?
Because that tribal custom is the second born is left to die.
Oh, wow.
So anthropologically, this is done in many cultures where many subsistence cultures that are in pretty desperate conditions. And in the bush, to have a child you're a target instantly for a predator. To have two babies, it's just, it's not good.
You're
for
just an
absolute target.
Yeah.
So that system, their belief system, they believe that second born was bad luck. Evil, which is bad luck. And so they would have carried her away and they would have said she should not be alive and they would have left her. And then they did. And then my grandfather, his tribal name, they name you, the Africans name you, his name was Sakawunda, which means father of peace. And so my grandfather said, where's the other baby? And he said, oh, Sakawunda, it's okay. I'm sorry. It's okay. And just trying to comfort him. Where is the other baby? He said, no, Sakawunda, it's okay. Sorry, it's okay. We'll be all right. And eventually, he's like, bring her back. Bring her back now. And just basically yelling and screaming. And finally, they went and got her back, brought her back. So my mom, she grew up. Now, there's seven siblings. She is the most shy, most reclusive. She's an incredible nurse. And a servant. But she's always hidden. All the other family are pretty outgoing or gregarious, but not her. And I actually think it's because as she was growing up, the other Africans would have said, when they saw her, it's like, oh, Vindele, she should not be alive. This is bad luck. And I think that affected her.
Yeah, that would be a really heavy.
And that's what she would have had for her entire life. She is bad luck. And I don't know, but
And where is she now?
She just passed away last year. Yeah, she was 96. She came to the States, which shocked me. She came to the States to retire. And she was used to the bush. She could barely even handle a grocery store. She couldn't handle a grocery store. She's used to the plethora of choices is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to be a burden to anybody, basically, even the Africans, even her friends. So she came to a retirement home in the States. She seemed to be happy there, but she just passed away last year. Got to be there, which I'm super grateful for. Sing tribal songs to her.
That must have been very special to have that moment.
It was. And she perked up. So that was just before she passed away.
I remember when she passed away.
Mm. So she went to the very same boarding school I went to. Now the difference, we used to go by car initially, 2 days journey, 200 miles through the bush roads. And then at some point, there are too many people being killed on the roads just by terrorists, basically, that they would fly us. So we got to, they built a bush strip right near our mission station, and they pick us up in a small Cessna airplane. We fly over the dangerous areas and fly really low over the trees. So by that time, somebody realized there was an airplane, it's like, whoa, they wouldn't be able to shoot us down, essentially. But my mom went to the very same boarding school, but she would walk.
She would walk the 200 miles to get there.
So I went up 5 years old, came home twice a year, just agony, hated that, hated it. We all wanted to escape, but it was too dangerous. I mean, just she wouldn't survive. Eaten, bitten, whatever it is. My mom would walk. So they, you know, walk in a party, basically, a whole group of people. In some areas, man-eater lion areas, they would walk basically almost 24 hours to get through that area. And at night, they'd walk super close, loud with you've probably seen this even on shows where, and then of course fire and just to try and get through that area. But that's the same place she grew up. She went to boarding school. So they went once a year, of course, you know, a big trip.
That's a huge trip.
Yeah.
So the kids at the boarding school, were they mostly missionary kids or were there African kids?
There were African, black Africans as well. Mm-hmm. So we had people from what was Zaire at that time, now Congo. And then Zambians, and then, whites as well as Africans.
Mm-hmm. A whole mix of people.
More missionaries than anybody else, more missionary kids. But
the school wasn't run by the missionaries.
It was run by missionaries.
It was run by, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So how successful was your family in converting?
Oh.
I mean, were there,
You know, that's an interesting story. I'll tell you my measure of success on that.
Yeah, because you did it too.
No, I mean, what brings tears to my eyes today? So, I mean, they certainly started churches, and Africa now is predominantly Protestant. I mean, prolifically. So, you know, I'd say in the mission work, in that sense, for them, Protestants is made up. They were successful in that sense. But my father is South African. He was actually born in what's Robben Island. Robben Island is the place where Nelson Mandela was held for, 30 years as a prisoner, right? So my father was born there. So he was South African, came as a young missionary to the bush in Zambia. And as a very, very young missionary, he connected with the Africans. And what I mean by that, he would touch them. He would hold their hand, shake their hand, look in their eyes, hug them, whatever it was. He's very...
To make that connection.
Yeah, he's very, very connected. The white missionaries at that time, mostly British, some Americans, some New Zealand, they would all say, no, we do not touch them. They don't touch the Africans. And like,
why? If you want them to be a part of your maybe religious family.
The kindest view is, I mean, obviously there's many diseases everywhere, so it's a lot of disease. That would be the kindest view. Maybe they also just figure that they shouldn't. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
They didn't. My father's not a rebellious guy. He was he's a very peaceful, sweet, gracious man. But he did anyway. So here's what I mean by success. When my father died, I took care of him in hospice, and he came to the States, happened to be visiting when I was going to the university, and he died. But when the Africans there in Zambia, when they heard he died, they said, never has a white man loved so many of us so deeply.
Oh, that's a great success story.
Yeah. And
what
that's
a
the difference.
Person.
He was not a preacher. He was, yeah. Yeah.
Steve, I want to thank you so much for sharing these stories.
Mm.
Do you have any final last ones?
The Luvali people are so sweet. There's a beautiful, beautiful Luvali welcome song. There's different versions, but I've got one here, Tambukeni Mwani, which is, welcome, welcome. And this is what this song is.
Okay.
Tambukeni Mwani, welcome visit.
Thank you.
Let's go build something together.
Wangeji, 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 wang
Well, that certainly sounds like a great bunch of people to hang out with and have some fun with. It's a beautiful song, a welcoming song.
We all
want to be welcome in.
Ah, very welcome.
Yeah.
Let me add a story. Two stories about the boarding school that both my mom and I went to. One is, first of all, our playground, one massive male lion went, walked right through the center of it.
Say that again?
A huge male lion.
Oh, male lion.
Male lion, yeah, massive one, walked right through the center of our playground, right in the middle of.
Oh my God.
What did
you guys do?
We were all in the classrooms anyway, so it's fine. We were also bombed by the Zairean Air Force one day. They thought we were some encampment. We were just next to the Zaire border. And a couple bombs came down. We heard it. Hit under our desk, but nothing happened and nobody was killed. So.
Oh, geez.
And then one other story. So education there. I'll never forget learning the word adrenaline. The way I learned adrenaline, right next to the boarding school, was a farm that supplied us, farm supply, meat and so on.
Mm-hmm.
One day, the lady there had a dog and there was a lion out there. So the dog was barking at the lion and she yelled
as
at the lion.
As a dog would.
Exactly. And so the dog, she yelled at the dog, come back. And eventually when the lion started charging, the dog turned around and hightailed it back towards the house. The lions are much faster than the dog. So the lion was coming faster and faster, and the woman could see the dog coming and the lion right behind it and realized the lion was going to come right in. And bottom line, she made the painful decisions, but she slammed the door halfway on the dog.
Oh, no.
So you can imagine what happened to the dog.
Oh.
So she picked up this massive teak dresser, this older woman, and picked the whole thing up. A couple hundred pounds, 400 pounds, put it on the front door. And then, of course, the next morning, couldn't get out. And then I learned the word adrenaline from that story.
Wow.
Just couldn't possibly move it.
No. Oh, that poor baby dog.
I know. Ugh.
Wow.
Terrifying.
Just on one final note, on the wild animals in Africa. I imagine here we are, fast forward, 50 years, whatever, X amount of years. And do they still run freely like that? Because there's so many poachers.
Some areas have been very good at conservation.
What about this area?
No, not so much. There, the boarding school, some of that area is a little bit more remote.
Mm-hmm.
And actually there's one of the former boarding school students has started up a game farm right next to us. So that's fantastic. And that always brings back other animals. Where I grew up, there's less and less.
Yeah, I bet.
Like the last times I've gone back, I've never seen a single snake, which is shocking to me. And I go back, I like to go back in the rainy season, which to me, that's a gorgeous time of year. And that's when snakes are also out.
Yeah, sure.
It's less and less. It's considerably less.
Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you sharing this. I mean, that's a very heartfelt story. Mm. Thank you.
My pleasure.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you, Vashon Island. This was the Cats and Jammer Follies. Please join us next week for another episode of Traveling Around This Big World of Ours.